You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
I think I could play that song for the next 6 minutes, or in fact, the entire segment, and we wouldn't do better with the commentary. What an honor it is to play that song, our national anthem, here on these airwaves. It is Confederate History Month. It is April, and welcome back to TPC. Henrik Palmgren in the first hour. Big round of applause to our good friend Henrik. But it's Confederate History Month, and our annual series is back. As you know, throughout the month of April, we're going to allocate up to 2 hours of airtime during each of our live broadcasts this month to remember the incredible honor and sacrifices made by our Southern heroes. Why do we call it Confederate History Month? Well, we didn't make that up. Confederate History Month is the month that was officially designated by most of the states in the South, at least traditionally speaking, the state governments in the South, for the purpose of recognizing and honoring the history of the Confederate States of America and its heroes. April has traditionally been chosen because, well, a couple of reasons. Confederate Memorial Day falls during that month in many of the Southern states, and also because the war began and ended in the month of April. The Battle of Fort Sumter, April 12th, 1861. Lee's tragic surrender at Appomattox, April 9th, 1865. And in the past years, we have featured star-studded lineups during our Confederate History Month series, featuring everyone from the noted Southern author Michael Andrew Grissom, Southern by the Grace of God, The Last Rebel Yell. Even former South Carolina Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell has joined the party in April, and this year will be no different. So why do we do it, though? Why do we do it? Because we're proud of our Southern heritage, and we maintain a great deal of respect for our ancestors who fought. And what did they fight for, ladies and gentlemen? Let me make it very clear to you. They fought to preserve the American way of life from 1861 to 1865. And that being said, we want you to join our celebration of the South this April. Keith, people listen all year long just to get to this point. I have people who send letters in saying they can't wait for Confederate History Month every year. So mark your calendars as we pay respects to those brave and good boys in gray who are worthy of our remembrance. They were truly better men and better Americans than you or I will ever know. And long may their memory live in the hearts and minds of all decent people. And TPC cut its teeth on Southern issues. We were fighting to defend Confederate parks the very year of our inception, and that's what brought us our first claim to fame. And if I was remembered for only that, that'd be good enough. It is an honor to have Confederate blood flowing in my veins, to be descended from men who fought for a cause greater than themselves and fought for a righteous cause. I am proud to be the son of a Confederate veteran.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the taking down of Confederate monuments, because that is key to what's happening in America. Why does the left want to destroy and obliterate the memory that is represented by those statues, the men that are personified in those statues? Well, the reason is They were right. And their existence, the existence of their statues, causes people to say, well, what were they all about? And the more that you see what they were about, the more you realize they were right and their adversaries were wrong. And that's an example that the left can't allow to exist in this new Soviet America that they seem to be thrusting upon us. You know, America was unique in the world during most of my life because America was the one place where you could be a success without being one brilliant or two having ruling class connections. And the rest of the world recognized it. They knew that America was that type of place. That's why to this very day, America is the most desired relocation place in the world. And the Southerners that fought for the original vision of the founding fathers were the most righteous Americans that ever were. Now, the cancel culture leftists now, the Antifa and Black Lives Matter, they are the spiritual heirs of the abolitionists. The abolitionists were only 2 to 5% of the American population at the time of the Civil War, and they could not let the South go. They grabbed onto us like a bulldog with a bloody bone, and the reason is it was so it was so gratifying for them to bend us to their will. And to this day, they don't want us to secede. You know, the Civil War was about secession. Well, guess what? A lot of people are coming to the conclusion that secession is the only real answer, short of a rebellion. And we don't want bloodshed and stuff like that. But this is a failed marriage between the South, or red state America, and blue state America, and a divorce is needed. And that's exactly what the South tried to do. The South basically was like Greta Garbo. They didn't want to enforce their will on the North. They just, like Greta Garbo, wanted to be left alone. And that's what we want today. The more things change, James, the more they stay the same.
Keith, it was only a four-year period in American history, but it was the most pivotal four-year period we have had, except for the Revolutionary War. And, of course, as you know, Michael Perutka has a wonderful article about how, and in it, he laments the Confederate retreat at Gettysburg, and, oh, my God.
It's hard to talk about this stuff, but I got to say this.
It's hard to talk about it because it is so personal. We've done Confederate History Month series for 16 years, so it's hard to say more than what we've said in the past, but it's so important to continue to say it and to say it over and over and over again. We're proud. These people were righteous. These men were holy. And
the left knows. The left knows.
Were the descendants of the founding fathers, by and large. Yeah. They were the ones who were, you know, Patrick Henry's progeny was fighting on the Confederate side.
The smart guys among the founding fathers were Southerners. Madison, Jefferson, George Mason, all of these people, those were the real intellectual heavyweights.
Obviously, Robert E. Lee has a direct connection through his wife with George Washington.
But see, the left and Lincoln wanted America to be a big player on the world stage, and they couldn't do that if America was half as populous, half as big, and half as wealthy. And that was the bottom line of why they wanted to prevent the South from
seceding. Well, it's just like every war. You can forget the whole narrative about slavery. It was about land. It was about money. Every war is fought about land, money, and power. None of them are fought about principles. Don't fool yourself, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back, and then we're going to get to Dissident Mama, who's kicking off our series this month, and what a month it's going to be.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperform gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Too, ladies and gentlemen.
And all God's children should be rebels.
As I've said before.
Satan's children are not.
As I've said before, we should never forget that the South was right. There is no shame to bear. In fact, I consider myself having won the genetic lottery for God to have allowed me to come into this world as a Southern man and to have been born and raised in a former Confederate state, the state of Tennessee. This is a birthright and something I wouldn't trade for any amount of money. It's an affirmation of pride. We should all share in it. I have made mention before on this program, of course, I had members of my family who fought and died for the Confederacy. A great-great-great-grandfather who was a member of the Confederate Cavalry fought at the Battle of Shiloh. The South never smiled again after Shiloh, they said. And that anniversary, by the way, is this week in April. I was born 115 years after Lee's surrender at Appomattox, and I can tell you that there is something deeply spiritual that comes over me when I hear Dixie being played. My eyes swell with emotion. I read about the gallant sacrifices of those brave men that they made in their attempts to stave off federal oppression and tyranny. And if you say, how can you feel that? Well, maybe it's a feeling that only a Southerner can truly know. But what is love again, I ask you, if not loving your own family and standing at the ready to defend their honor when need be? Keith, it's a heritage, it's a cause, it's a culture worth laying down your life for. And what an honor it is There is no one on the earth I would rather be than James Edwards. What an honor it is to be able to host a program along with Keith Alexander that has this community of friends like Hendrik Palmgren, who you heard from earlier tonight, like Rebecca Dillingham, who you'll hear from beginning in the next segment, like all the guests we feature throughout the year, throughout our 16-year run last week, Philip DeWinter, Nick Griffin. I mean, we could go on and on. What an honor it is to host this show, to be able to talk about the things and champion the ideas of men and a cause better than ourselves, but none better than our Confederate forebears, Keith.
I was looking through some old family photographs and things, and I found a very interesting photograph. It was a photograph of a man named John Sally, who's one of the last two Civil War veterans to be alive. I think he died in 1959, and that's he was like 112 years old. Well, let me tell you, this is what it's all about.
If you make it that long, Keith, we'll be 50 years on the radio.
Well, just think about this. This is, you know, that's a heritage we have. And the South was, like you said, right. The South was not interested in being a big player in the international stage. They believed in George Washington's farewell address principles that we shouldn't be going abroad, as John Quincy Adams said, seeking monsters to conquer. And George Washington said the surest way to lose our independence and our republic is to fight in foreign wars, get embroiled in that, and to have special relationships with other nations. And that's exactly what the Lincolnites that followed, triumphed in the Civil War, and then recrafted America. That's why we're over in the Middle East now, where we shouldn't be, trying to force people that we don't know to the will of a bunch of abolitionist descendants that are in the American government right now. Now, the problem with the South is that they were too noble. You know, there was
four... Amen to that. At the first Manassas, they should have sacked Washington and sent them to hell on a shuttle.
Well, see, that was one of the opportunities that was missed. At first Manassas, Beauregard was the Confederate general, and he was always too cautious in the way he handled things. If we won...
If Lee and Forrest had run the whole thing, Lee, Forrest, and Jackson, the United States wouldn't stand a chance.
That's right. And see, what happened at first Manassas, they were in position, the Confederates, to overrun D.C., and if they had... and had captured Lincoln, it would have been just like the Texas War for Independence. They would never have won that war had they not captured Santa Anna and had him as a bargaining chip.
You know,
if they had Lincoln as a bargaining chip, they could have settled that case out right then.
Another pivotal moment in history, pardon the interruption, my friend, but another pivotal moment, the Battle of Stalingrad. If Germany had pushed it a little bit further, they would have outrun Russia, and that would have been a totally different world we would have lived in today.
Yeah, and really, you know, just think about, see... They also had the worst winter that they had ever had.
It was
in,
the
in,
earliest
in 100 years.
Early Russian winter. Yeah, we know all that, but I'm just saying they were that close. The Confederates were that close.
The Confederates were very close then, and also at Shiloh. You mentioned Shiloh. Forrest said after the first day, let's keep up the attack. We can't cut off the attack now because if the North gets its reinforcements at Pittsburgh Landing overnight, they could turn it, but right now we've got them hemmed in, and we can finish them off. Well, again, Beauregard, bless his heart, he was the guy that took over for Albert Sidney Johnson after Albert Sidney Johnson was killed, and again, his cautious approach cost this, us to lose the West, basically. That's what happened in Shiloh.
I got to say one thing, and Shiloh is, of course, near and dear to us because my Confederate forebears from the state of Mississippi fought in the cavalry there.
Well, so did mine. My ancestor, I.E.S. Alexander, fought there, and he had a brother named President Washington Alexander who was killed there.
President Washington was his legitimate given name on his birth.
Yeah, I mean, they were running out of names. He was one of 12 children.
Listen, when we wrap up this series, we're going to have some great guests on this month, like Gene Andrews, the Nathan Bedford Forrest historian, our good friend who has spoken at every political cesspool conference we've ever had, Michael Hill, Dr. Michael Hill. But listen, Courtney from Alabama is going to come on at the very last hour of the very last show of this month, and she wants us to talk about our Confederate heritage and our Confederate, our direct
ancestors.
Our ancestors. But so, IES, what's that stand for? What does IES stand for?
Independence Ellen Schuyler Alexander.
Now, that's a hell of a name.
Now, he was in far as 15th Tennessee Cavalry. And he was like a lot of Southerners. They wanted to fight for a fighter. They didn't want to be under some guy that's liable to surrender them like Simon Bolivar Buckner did at Fort Donelson so that they could die up on Johnson's Island.
My God, I love Confederate History Month. Keith, I could go 3 hours with this on you. Just what you're – this is what it's all about. I mean, this is –
Our ancestors wanted to fight and win, and they wanted to align themselves with a fighter – Forrest.
This goes back to what Michael Hill talks about, our ancestral memory. I mean, of course, the Southerners predominantly descended from the Scots-Irish. And those were fighting men. Those were people who went in with the...
They were the best. They were the key frontiersman stock, the settlers. They were the people that could survive out there in the wilderness among hostile Indian tribes.
I've had it the 2 or 3 years we've talked with Michael Hill about the tactics that the Celts used, Scotsmen used centuries prior, and the Confederates used that because they descended from that.
Shopkeepers and put them out on the frontier, they would be decimated. That's what happened to the Swedes when they were first brought over to Minnesota and places
like
that.
What happened to the Vikings? When did they go from Vikings to Swedes?
Well, they became Swedes because being up there, they never had to deal with invading enemy armies.
Well, they certainly invaded them as Vikings.
But they did the invading.
Viking to a cuck?
Well, because you don't have those defensive skills. See, the Scots-Irish were always having their land traversed by enemy armies, either the Highlanders going south or the English going north. So they developed a sixth sense when trouble was brewing, and they took their weapons to the field, and they'd say, you know, things are a little too quiet. I think I better go back up to the house and check, okay? That's because the tactics of stragglers following armies is exactly like that of a band of Indian braves. They would go around. They'd come upon a farmhouse. They'd act like they were hostile, but then they if they didn't see somebody there with arms, they would fall upon the people and kill them. That's why
the preliminary figures show an increase of about 140,000 from a year ago. Nearly 20,000 of those encounters were with unaccompanied minors. Congressman Troy Nails visited the border earlier this week. The Texas Republican tells Fox News about his visit to one Border Patrol facility housing those unaccompanied minors.
Had an opportunity, many of us, to go down and look at the Donna facility and look at the travesties that are taking place there with the overcrowding, because the Border Patrol can't handle all the children. There are thousands of them entering our country, and now they're being sprinkled throughout Texas. And pretty soon they're going to come to a neighborhood in a small town, a small community near you.
This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio. Did you know this station, this network, is looking for their next rock star broadcaster? That's right, we are. And it could be you. It could be you interviewing the guests, talking to the newsmakers right in the middle of everything. Have you ever dreamed of being a rock star show host? Now could be your chance. Together with this station, we'll help you with everything you need. The studios, the equipment, your own producer, a co-host if you'd like, and so much more. Broadcasting is changing. There's never been a need for fresh voices and unique opinions like there is right now. You can do this. Our professional team will guide you every step of the way. Sound effects, show content, building your social network media, and everything you need to be the next rock star broadcaster. Get all the details. Email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. To get started with your own show, email Bill at rockstar.today. That's Bill at rockstar.today. Don't wait. You could be the next voice for America. Email Bill at rockstar.today.
The CDC has changed the guidelines regarding domestic travel ahead of an expected surge in travel over the Easter weekend. John Clemens has that story.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says fully vaccinated people can resume domestic travel.
We state that fully vaccinated people can resume travel at low risk to themselves.
Dr. Walensky defined what is the definition of being fully vaccinated.
Fully vaccinated is defined as 2 weeks after receiving the single dose vaccine or after 2 weeks after receiving the second dose of the two dose vaccines.
Dr. Walensky said the CDC recommends getting tested after returning from an overseas trip. From the USA Radio News Texas Bureau, I'm John Clemens.
The new guidance in the U.S. coming as several European countries have locked down for the holiday. Italy and France have entered nationwide lockdowns amid a surge in COVID cases and slow rollout of vaccinations. This is USA Radio News.
So proud of it. He couldn't stop talking during the commercial break. In fact, after we hit the wall of the commercial break, Keith kept talking. He talked at least a minute into the break. It was incredible. He was holding court for no one but himself.
Well, all that we have to say is this. Scots Irish had a special background that the Vikings did not have. The Vikings were never invaded. They never had to deal with hostile armies in their midst like the Scots Irish did. So that's that.
Now, all right.
Also, the other thing that why we lost the war was that we were gentlemen. We fought the thing properly.
Yeah, we figured that. Yeah, we figured that at First Manassas. But anyway, listen, kicking off our Confederate History Month series as far as the guests are concerned, and we've had so many wonderful guests, Michael Andrew Grissom, Lieutenant Governor Scott, whoever he was from South Carolina a couple of years ago. I should know that. Anyway, Rebecca Dissident Mama Dillingham, she's a truth warrior. She told me I didn't have to read the whole bio, but I got to read it because she wrote it so well. She's a truth warrior, a Jesus follower, and isn't that important on Easter weekend? She's a wife, a mother of three sons, a lifelong learner, an apologetics practitioner for Orthodox Christianity, the Southern tradition, homeschooling, freedom. She's a Virginian by birth, and we got a clip from another native Virginian we're going to play in the next segment, a Carolinian by choice. A recovering feminist, socialist, atheist graduate of the University of Wisconsin and retired mainstream journalist turned domesticated bell and rabble-rousing rhetorician. You can visit her website, dissidentmama.net, dissidentmama.net. Please be there because we're always there. I'm there every day.
Let me tell you, there's a similarity between us. She escaped from Wisconsin, I escaped from Minnesota, yeah. And by doing that, we escaped being Midwestern liberals.
That's right. You'll find she is, in fact, a dissident mama who's adept at triggering leftists, Yankees, and neocons. She's going to bang as loudly as she can, and she's going to bang again now. Rebecca, it's so great to have you back. I think we had you on for the first time for this very series last year, and then since then you've made several appearances with us, and again tonight, it's great to have you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? I'm very honored to be here.
Well, we're always better when you're with us. So, listen, we've rambled on enough. Let's turn it right over to you. And I think we may have touched on this when you were last on with us on the Valentine's Day broadcast with regards to raising decent, healthy, knowledgeable, righteous families. The importance of teaching our children to revere their Southern forebears and their Confederate heroes. You could teach a master's class on that. Take it away and take it as long as you want.
So the importance of it, is that the question? James?
Yeah, the importance of it and how you do it, because I know you've taken field trips, you've gone to these wonderful expositions.
Well, yeah, you know, Rebecca, here's the situation. They're tearing down Confederate statues for a purpose, and that's a purpose that you work against.
Yes. Okay, sorry. I thought I was having a tech issue because I had that at the beginning. So anyway, you know, that's just the way I roll. I usually start off things kind of crazy, so that just fits my personality. So, the importance of it, you know, we're links in a chain, and historical study, and I'm just an amateur historian, but, you know, my interest is a lifelong learner, but you need to study history and ancestry and who you are because, you know, it needs to be not fettered by wokeism and postmodern prejudices and all the stuff that is constantly all around us. And I give my kids, they're not sheltered. I mean, I actually They know what's going on in the world. They're 12 and 13 now. I have twins, so two 12-year-olds and a 13-year-old. You know, we can talk honestly, but even before they were as mature as they are now, you know, it's this balance of you want to protect them, but also prepare them for the world. So studying history gives them proper context to not only where they came from, but how we got to the hellscape we're living in right now and how we move forward with it. And, you know, y'all had been talking about, the war being an invasion, that it was a completely different precept from what the Yankees were doing, that it was defending your home, your family. That's a whole different ball of wax than what the North was doing. So, you know, studying history in that way and going to these sites and doing your research before you go there, because even sometimes the signage is old and it's okay and they haven't put up context or whatever, but knowing what you're looking at before you go there just in case. So we had gone to Atlanta recently and gone to Oakwood Cemetery, either Oakwood or Oak Lawn, I can't remember. But anyway, it's the oldest cemetery in Atlanta, and everything was covered with tarps and, you know, had been spray painted and all this kind of stuff. But we knew what we were going into, and we were knowledgeable before we got there. Now, I did crawl behind some barriers and get yelled at and had my my Swiss Army knife and was, you know, cutting the zip ties off so I could read it. And then the man said, well, you can't be doing that. You know, and he gave me, I forget exactly what he said, but you can't be doing that. That's not right. You know, you need to follow the rules. And I said, well, the people who spray painted this stuff weren't following the rules. And it was this older black man. And he looked at me, he's like, yeah, you're absolutely right. But my job is to keep people from jumping behind the gate at the Lion of Atlanta because we need to clean it up. And I said, well, this happened in June. Y'all are pretty slack, because this was just about a month ago that I went there. It was early March, I think. But anyway.
Rebecca, let me invite you to come to Memphis and let me take you to Elmwood Cemetery, which has the most Confederate generals buried in it in Memphis of any other cemetery in the world except for Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond.
And wouldn't you know it, Rebecca just put up a piece, or not too long ago, at dissidentmama.net that lamented the current state of affairs in Richmond, Virginia, which is where, of course, Hollywood Cemetery is. But, I mean, we're talking right now about the importance of instilling in our children a fundamental and most needed reverence for their Southern ancestors, and to try to emulate them in the ways that we can in this fallen time that we've had the unfortunate reality of being born into, the nadir of American history, I think. I mean, we were born at the low point of it. But
well, what's happened here basically is that the descendants of the abolitionists are trying to finally choke us out of existence entirely. That's what they're doing with taking down Confederate statues. They just, like their ancestors, can't give up the glee that they have from forcing us to their will.
Well, Rebecca has done such a good job of educating not only her own family, along with her husband, of course, her boys, but a greater audience at large at dissidentmama.net. So, again, Rebecca, with only about a minute remaining this segment, why is it important to you to carry the banner of your Confederate forebears?
Well, if people haven't noticed, we're living under the largest government in the world. It's quite imperial, and nobody seems to be happy. So this is the bridge I try to build with people, especially fellow Southerners or even sympathetic people, conservatives, you know, who maybe aren't from the South. It's that, you know, our ancestors were fighting the exact same thing that we all are miserable living under, you know, and leftists are miserable under this imperial hellscape that we're living in now too. So I try to make the connection that this is nothing new, and we had this period in the 20th century that was, you know, it was kind of this reconciliation period, a little bit of people getting along, but that was a blip, you know, in the history of America, which is short anyway, but, and it may be very short, but that, you know, people have been through this before. Americans have been through this before. So that's the how I try to bridge the gap with people, so they understand why it is so important to understand why the war happened, why people fought, you know, not slavery, shmavery, blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. It's we're living.
Well, you know, everybody's talking about secession again.
Of the South losing.
Well, see, everybody's talking about secession right now. And again, that's the unresolved issue from the Civil War.
Well, I've heard of a book called Racism Schmacism, but we need one from Distant Mama called Slavery Schmacism.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, it's enslavement. Don't forget, it's now enslavement. I apologize to the masses. It's enslavement. So anyway, you can't keep up with all this stuff. But yeah, absolutely. And the people who are modern secessionists now want some of them even distance themselves. Well, the Southerners were traitors, but we're not. You know, whatever.
Wait, hold on. Hold on right there, Rebecca. Rebecca, Dissident Mama Dillingham, DissidentMama.net. It's one of my favorite reads in a daily read. We're going to talk about Robert E. Lee, another
Let's
native Virginian. Like Rebecca.
Back to the political cesspool.
Almost as
right
good as
after
Rebecca.
These messages here on
we
Liberty
back,
News
they do.
Radio Network.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm, by a friend of Medjugorje. The Strategy of Heaven, revealed. Big Q, Little Q, The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things, and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Allow me to get to the point, sir. I have been authorized by President Lincoln himself, with the full blessing of the War Department, to offer you full command of the Army with the rank of Major General, this army being raised to quell this rebellion and, of course, to preserve the Union.
I assume this army is to be used to invade those areas. To eliminate the rebellion by force.
Yes, sir. The federal government has been challenged by these rebels, who have been most effective in changing the sentiments of various state legislatures, challenging our constitution and challenging our central government. The attack on Fort Sumter cannot be ignored.
General, my home is right there across the Potomac. Well, you can see Arlington House from your front door. My family is spread all over this part of Virginia. If you invade the South, your enemy territory will be there, right across that river.
Well, sir, there is no great outcry for secession in Virginia. It's not a foregone conclusion that Virginia or Tennessee, Arkansas, or Kentucky will join the rebellion.
My friend, may I humbly submit that you're mistaken about Virginia. As you know, the legislature is convening in Richmond this very day to discuss the very issue of secession. Now, perhaps you know their mind better than they themselves. And I regret to say the president's hasty calling up of 75,000 volunteers to subdue the rebellion in the cotton states has done nothing to ameliorate the crisis. It has only deepened it.
I trust you're not being too hasty yourself, Colonel. This is a great opportunity for you to serve your country.
My country, Mr. Blair. I never thought I'd live to see the day that a president of the United States would raise an army to invade his own country. No, Mr. Blair, I cannot lead it. I will not lead it.
I'm sorry to hear you say that, sir. I fear you're making a most dreadful mistake.
Sir, would you please convey my deepest sense of honor and gratitude to the president, but I must decline his offer. Please tell him, please be clear. I have never taken my duties lightly, but I have no greater duty to my home, to Virginia.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been doing Confederate History Month, a series on this broadcast for 16 years, and there are some things we play every year, and that's one of the clips. That's, of course, from the movie Gods and Generals. Robert Duvall excellently played Robert E. Lee in that film. I saw it in the theaters in the early 2000s. Warner Brothers, if you can believe it, Warner Brothers even reached out to us some years ago to offer the support for the re-release of that DVD. It's a great movie. You should check it out. But Rebecca, Dissident Mama, DissidentMama.net, you listen to that native Virginian Robert E. Lee, who I believe is the greatest American who ever lived. You listen to that. I think the more I play it, the more I respect it, the more I value it. As the courage of men continues to fail and fails ever more convincingly, you value the righteous stand of a man like that at a moment like that to command the American army. He turned it down because he couldn't turn a sword against his home, his family. When you hear that clip, what do you think, Rebecca?
Well, I have the same reaction as you. And my kids and I went a few years ago to the spot in the Virginia Capitol where he then, after turning down the position with the Federals, accepted his position as commander of the Army of Northern Virginia. And there was a statue there. It was, I believe, right inside the House chambers. That's what you saw. There was like George Washington outside in the hallway, and then you would come in, and it was the spot where he accepted. That, of course, was ripped out in the middle of the night because a bunch of Yankees in Richmond decided they wanted it to go. And people in Richmond, you know, there are some people resistant to it, but it happened. And, you know, that Lee statue is probably going to come down on Monument Avenue, too. But I absolutely agree with you. Winston Churchill agreed with us. You know, Dwight Eisenhower agreed with us. JFK agreed with us. They broke the mold with Robert E. Lee because he loved his country, Virginia, so much. And, you know, he had gone to school at West Point. You know, he had fought for the United States and, you know, and other wars, but he understood what his home was, and that when it's
well, you know, they're not just taking down statues of dead men.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Yeah, they know that.
Yeah, well,
you know, like every other revolution, when they take down the statues, you know, the people that rever those statues won't be far behind.
Well, one of the things, right. Rebecca, I want to get to, yeah, and I want to be sure to get to this. Well, mm-hmm. pardon the interruption, yeah. my friend. I just want to say this, and you can take it in any direction you want. You had a blog entry okay. at DissidentMama.net on March the 4th, learning from Lee. There is a, you know, one thing that's interesting, they can bring down the monuments, they can do these things. There are other monuments going up, by the way. There's also new media being created that celebrates and reveres our Confederate heroes, the greatest Americans who ever lived by any standard of measurement, as far as I'm concerned, that are being produced. And you have here this Robert E. Lee, A History Book for Kids. It was written and created by Ann Wilson Smith, who is, of course, the daughter of the great Southern hero, Clyde Wilson. You wrote a review of this book. I have a copy of this book that I read to my children. I have read it to my children before bed. Robert E. Lee, A History Book for Kids. So continue on with your answer, what you were going to say, but I want to be sure to plug this book because it is important to know that even in this day and age, there is still new content out there being produced that we need to know about.
Yes, and, you know, I think it was maybe Sophocles who said, you know, the wars take the best and spare the cowards. Well, you know, obviously Robert E. Lee survived the war, but that's what the cowards are trying to do now is tear him down because he is such a symbol of duty, faith, honor, home, kith, kin, loyalty that, you know, a lot of people, oh, well, he's just some old dead white guy, but he is such a symbol of, you know, how we move forward. And that's why I think that book is so timely and timeless because, you know, it's not just Robert E. Lee died and he's just a guy buried in the ground. It is that what he carried with him and what he exemplified and exuded as a man living through the harshest of times, we all need to take note. You know, it's like when Christians study the saints, you know, something, you know, the history repeats itself, right? There's nothing new under the sun. So if we learn from these great people who were put in times that we cannot even imagine, you know, it's going to help prepare us. And then on top of that, too, it's revolutionary to read about Robert E. Lee now and not read your Doris Kearns Goodwin and all this kind of stuff, you know, to really know who the real Lee was and to get at this unwoke, unvarnished Lee. And it's a children's book, right? But it's still such a great reminder to adults that, you know, we're living through these psychological trials and gaslighting is all around us. But if we put ourselves in a different world and remind ourselves who our heroes are, Southern Christian heroes, you know, it helps us not feel alone and to navigate this world that is utterly, you know, demon possessed at every turn. And I'm not just saying that hyperbolically. I honestly, it's scary out there, y'all. I mean, we get it. So that book just to me was so refreshing. And I will say Ann Wilson Smith is my friend, but I would have written the review regardless because it was just so well done and beautifully illustrated, and I think everybody should own that book. It's great.
Well, I want to thank you again, Rebecca, for writing the review, for all you do. So many blog entries related to Southern history at DissidentMama.net. I want to thank you again for kicking off our Confederate History Month series this year. I guess this would be, what is this, would this be our 17th installment? I mean, it's our 16th year, but we have not yet reached our 17th birthday, so this is our 17th installment. You're a leadoff guest. Keith, I know you're going to be vamping out after this segment. We've got Brett McAtee, who's going to be coming on to deliver an Easter message. We're going to celebrate the resurrection of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He was Robert E. Lee's Savior. If he's good enough for Robert E. Lee, he's good enough for you, ladies and gentlemen. So stay tuned for Pastor Brett's message. Rebecca Dillingham, Dissident Mama, lover, can't get enough of her. Keith, final word to you, buddy.
Okay, Rebecca.
Hold on. Whoa, what happened to your mic? No, go. Go.
Are you going? Okay, here's the situation. They cannot allow the memory and the statues of people like Nathan Bedford Forrest and Robert E. Lee and other Confederate heroes to exist. That shows you just how serious they are about this transformation, this great reset that they have in mind for us. They are going to try to plow their memory into the ground just the way that Chairman Mao did and Stalin did and Lenin did. Back in their revolutions. We're in revolutionary times now, and believe me, when they go after the statues, they're going to go after the people that rever those statues very shortly thereafter.
Yeah, they come first for the fabric, our flags, the stone of our monuments, and they come for our flesh and blood. Rebecca, the final word is to you.
I was going to say thank you to y'all for doing this for 17 years. 17 years ago, I was probably, I don't know, a Grateful Dead show or something. I don't know. But I was not fighting the fight the way y'all do. And I
still have those tie-dyed shirts.
I really appreciate it.
Hey, listen, yeah, we appreciate
but
you.
I thank y'all.
We love you. 17 years ago, I was three years old. I was doing this as a toddler.
That's
yeah, I'm
right.
40 now. But, yeah, but anyway, hey, listen.
Another hour of the political cesspool.
God bless you. Happy Easter. I'm thankful to God for bringing our paths together, and we're happy to know you, and we're happy to work with you. DissidentMama.net, ladies and gentlemen. That's where you need to be. We'll be back with Pastor Brett next.